As you know, Karen, the panel of five men and seven women in the R. Kelly trial yesterday were excused last night. They deliberated less than 4 hours without reaching a verdict. Do you make anything of that? And what is the thinking again about what the verdict might be and how long a jury is out?
Well, I'm not surprised at all that they didn't reach a conclusion. I mean, the first few hours, they're probably just sorting through the evidence. They're figuring out who the foreperson might be and just discussing things in general, maybe taking an initial vote. But there are a lot of complicated charges here. There's obstruction and child pornography and sex abuse and conspiracy. And so those are complicated jury instructions. So it doesn't surprise me that it's probably going to take a little bit of time to sort out these charges. And we also have three different defendants with three different sets of charges. The thinking is that the longer the jury is out, the better for the defense, because they're having issues with, beyond a reasonable doubt, that type of thing. But again, you never know, because it took 4 hours to acquit OJ. But remember Scott Peterson with his wife, that took 7 days to convict. So you just never know exactly what a jury is doing by the length of time.
The defense stressed that the prosecution took a long time to bring the charges. Do you think that's a good argument for an acquittal?
I think that's an excellent argument, because, and I've made this argument as a defense lawyer, is like, you took 15 years to bring these charges. You had reasonable doubt before you brought them. Well, otherwise, you would have brought them immediately. You know, when that trial happened in 2008, and now you're saying that R. Kelly and his people fixed that trial and intimidated witnesses, why didn't you bring those charges immediately thereafter? And I think that's an excellent point for the defense to bring.
So the sentence would be in addition to the 30-year sentence that he got in New York, correct?
Well, that's complicated too, Bob, because the judge has a lot of discretion in determining whether it's concurrent or in addition to. And depending on how the allegations are, these allegations are very similar to the ones in New York, but they're slightly different. The judge can add some years to the sentence, or he can say it's concurrent. But you know what? It probably doesn't matter, because at age 55, he's got a 30-year sentence in federal court. He's going to be an old man if he ever gets out.
Yes, for sure. The Twitter whistleblower has been in the news. And what do you think his testimony means, not just for Twitter, but social media in general?
I think we're seeing all these whistleblowers come to Congress and to the Senate. And I think the whole point is that the politicians are saying, listen, we have serious security problems. We have serious privacy issues. We need more regulation. And I think that the testimony from the whistleblower yesterday was pretty clear that there were all kinds of breaches and all kinds of scary things that can happen when you have these security issues. And I think we're going to see a time where our government is going to get more active, whether we like it or not, in regulating social media. I think the FTC is out of its league, according to what we're hearing from these whistleblowers, and they either need to toughen up or we need a new body, a government body, to regulate social media.
And how does all this factor into Elon Musk? And he's trying to get out of the deal, isn't he?
Right. He tweeted a little emoji of a popcorn box, meaning I'm watching this one.
Yeah.
Because it does help him, because he's going to say, look at all of these things that Twitter didn't disclose. In fact, there were false filings to the FTC. And listen, I didn't know I was buying a company that wasn't worth what I'm paying for it. So, yeah, he's going to use all of those things to try to get out of that acquisition.
Finally, last week, Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts made his first public comments about the court's controversial decisions. And was he saying that it's unfair to criticize the Supreme Court?
He said exactly that, Bob. And, you know, I try not to be super opinionated when I come on your show. But I actually was very offended by that, because what he's saying is that people don't have a right to be angry at the opinions that the Supreme Court issues. And certainly people should be and can be angry at whatever they want, whatever political bent you have. I mean, the idea that the women had a right to choose for 50 years, and our Supreme Court said that we have an absolute inviolable right to choose how our reproductive system works. And now 50 years later, a different group of people say we don't. Why shouldn't we be angry? And the fact that he says we shouldn't be angry is sort, I mean, we should be able to be critical of that too.
Well,
because, you know, they're not infallible. And maybe some group of judges is wrong and some group of judges is right. But I just found that to be very arrogant.
What he was saying, he took issue with questioning the legitimacy of the court, didn't he?
He did. And again, the legitimacy of the court, I think, was impacted by doing the flip-flop. You know, you have this court that's supposed to be the final word in what the law is. And 50 years ago, we had the final word, and now we have a new final word. Mm-hmm. Do we have a right to say that's not a legitimate court? I think we can argue that. I mean, we don't have to, but we can.
Well, you can argue it Sunday. More from Karen Conti on the radio here on WGN. And it's Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock. Thanks, Karen. Have a good day.
You too, Bob.